I was blue and I was always wearing a frown, because my gal had turned me down. Then we met and you could bet I knew from the first you were my love, cause that's when the old gray now burst. My heart really blew the day you crossed my eye. I hope that we do.
That is Cloudburst by Lambert Hendricks and Ross, updated on Apple Music Jazz. I am just tickle pink to be able to give you little blurbs of music throughout this particular podcast. And welcome to the podcast, a very dreary Sunday morning, closing up on the afternoon. This is your host, Tenfro, broadcasting from Mississippi Avenue. Today I'll be talking just about, it was an inside kind of day because it rained most of the weekend, but I was able to watch great classic black romance movies, listen to great music that was incorporated within a nostalgic for a time with mixed feelings. I don't know how most people approach the 90s. Talking about a whole bunch of books and giving my final thoughts on when Dutch's cousin Mary spilled the tea with Oprah. And I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and thank you again for always listening.
Light as a breeze through the trees, boy. Pleasant as one drum of breeze, boy.
That is Reversal of a Dog by the LaFace Cartel, Boomerang. I think Boomerang was released in 1992, and then I had to go back and look up what I was actually doing in 1992. It wasn't a whole bunch because I was a junior, in college when this movie actually released. What struck me was Eddie Murphy had a certain amount of swagger that most people I think can relate to. He was known for Delirious and star Saturday Night Live, and his stand-up was pulling in the millions. He was by this time truly a superstar. He had a stylist, he cultured, it cracked me up, his hairstylist, I don't know who did it, but he had a whole bunch of conchylene in this particular, as Marcus Graham, the advertising exec, doggishness of the dog and the paramour, and the player ended up getting played by the Robin Givens character. And he played before he straightened up, and he ended up with another equally beautiful woman, Halle Berry. I remember when I went to see this movie, that was my hairstyle for a number of years. And you see my yearbook pictures from Mary Washington. I had Halle Berry's hair. Shaved, unshaved, but that was the jank for a number of years. But there was a lot of great superstars in this movie, including Grace Jones. And she also had a feature song in the movie, 7 Day Weekend. I was thinking about also displaying within the podcast notes her scene in the restaurant when she could not understand why Marcus would not sleep with her. But that's her song, 7 Day Weekend by Grace Jones, which was also a part of this great movie. What I think would also really make the movie great is just the amount of amazing songs, the richness of R&B. All of these songs I don't know if it was the intent, but they all had a baby face, the New Jack Swing kind of driving bass line. And it's the soundtrack also basically just made the movie. And it was, that was what I realized about how all of the movies, like even romance from the 90s, how the soundtrack or the music was inherently or was an expectation for the soundtrack also to be slamming because it went with the movie. It went with the times. It just, it was just a great balance of, it's not like the screenplays were written so well and were just so thought-provoking. There was a detail or an attention to detail played to the background, the music in the background, which meted with the rhythm of the scene. All of those things played. Even I was just harping on Eddie Murphy's hair, but even how well tailored, that's one of the things that struck me about how the costumers, whoever they actually had cutting and design or that did the costume design were also on point. I was just really struck by how carefully tailored Eddie Murphy's and Robin Givens and even Eartha Kitt's, her amazing gowns, and just the details from the sequins to the hair, all of those things, were also played on one another and they also fit together. I was like, Murphy's looking fly, in his little, European cut pants and the shirts. And it just was, he was remarkably well tailored. And again, it was obvious where the money was spent and those attention details. You're going to drop that kind of cash. It is obvious that it was a great thought process that was actually put out for it. Even Grace Jones and her Strange shenanigans. It was just, that was the thing that was not surprising, but I was even more impressed with even looking at it almost 20 years later, because over 20 years later, because that dropped in like 92, 93. Also, I noticed the shot of Midtown, you still could see the tower. So this, as well as I noticed also in Love Jones. And this is Hopeless by Dion Ferris. Which was also one of the many great hits within that movie. But just, it was a pre 9/11 movie that was still showcasing the complexities of relationships. And it was another classic black romance that dropped in the late 90s, I believe. It's like each one of these movies identify with a period in my life, like a transition. For example, Boomerang came out right at the end when I was actually finishing up my undergraduate education. And then Love Jones came out when I was just finishing up medical school and getting ready to make a big move on to my next, where was I going to go after I was going to be packing up my life and leaving Florida, you know, after had going to school in Virginia and my entire family was in Virginia, and then going to Florida, going to medical school, and then starting all over again to get more training in Texas. So this movie came out, Love Jones came out, starring, Lorenz Tate and Nia Long. And again, it spoke to the complexities of relationship and I didn't know that it was not a financial success. It has a definitely a cult following. And it was an unorthodox take on the romance genre. It was like the hip hop version of When Harry Met Sally. And the director, Theodore Wichers, this was his only directorial work to date, but it basically surrounds a poet. He probably had some corporate job because he ended up leaving it eventually to write his book. He was in the hipster scene in Chicago where it was a nightclub that presented jazz and poetry to a really upscale and bougie clientele. That's where the Lorenz Tate character meets Nina Mosley, played by Nia Long. And Darius Love Hall is played by Lorenz Tate. They exchange small talk. He dedicates a poem to her. They start this very complicated relationship as they are both making transitions and moves in their own career. This is a group in their early 20s, just trying to figure it all out, and all are creatives. I loved the scene where, because we don't have those, I would love to have a secondhand or even a firsthand, because with the represses record shop, played by one of the other characters, I think her name is Sheila, and being able to just surround yourself with music and listen to music all day and people coming in and talking. And it could also be a way place where if it could be set up for people to write in poetry, have some coffee, listen to some great tunes, and then buy a record or five. So that, I think there is a place like that. If it has survived, I haven't been outside. So if it survived that, I used to be able to do that. Not McKay's, but it's a place right up here on the north side where it was that kind, gave you that kind of vibe. And again, I don't know if it actually is still open. There's a lot of places that did not survive. The pandemic. But I'm hopeful that maybe one day when we are able to go out and don't have to worry about being hunted by the corona because we're in the middle of a Panera Bread, that we can actually go out and vibe. And that was the other, the intricacies of these relationships is what I was alluding to. How they were so free, so young, a combination of two creative expressions between poetry and at this time it became slam poetry, but also how it intersect with jazz. This was, again, homage to R&B. I loved a lot of the songs that they included on the soundtrack. Like this one, The Sweetest Thing by the Fuji Camp. There was a decidedly heavy Fuji and Lauryn Hill, which this was also a time when she was her most active. And you can hear her in the Refugee Camp All-Stars. Because I think by this time, she had already gone solo and had married the man, Bob Marley's son, that would eventually lead to her, I think, her nervous breakdown. Also, Escape, Love Jones, from Love Jones, this is In the Rain. Wasn't this a remake of the Keith Sweat thing? I do think that was it. And then this one, why wouldn't you have a song that...
Ladies and gentlemen, Refugee Camp presents
the remake,
Belky Sadek,
or that
on alto,
Alyssa homage,
and Jay,
to the movie itself.
Back
the movie is called Bye. Love Jones, and of course, this is Melky and Day. I got a Love Jones for you, and this has that beat or that swing where it's a homage and a combination of hip hop with a driving bass line jazz riff, maybe? But it also goes, and most of, if you listen to most of the other songs, I included only a few, with this particular segment, but that you can't go wrong with any of the songs, and the movie itself, you know, it has the typical, as I said, it was a hip-hop version or a jazz version of When Harry Met Sally, but it does work. Nobody wants to be in that lack of complicated or transparent relationship, and what was key was the ability of what the only reason all relationships are work, some are more than others. When do you finally say or give up the ghost win or ask for outside help? That was also how they worked it out. And how much time we basically waste on just ridiculous stuff. And miscommunications can leave you alone and missed opportunities to be together. That was the driving thing, I think, what was aggressively and poetically made this movie work so well. And last but not least, Love of My Life, an ode to hip hop, featuring Common and Erykah Badu. And again, not only was the movie Brown Sugar, it was chock full of everybody that was hot in black cinema at the time. But again, this is another soundtrack that just fit with the movie and the driving beat on how life and the speech and everything was just so intertwined. There was such an uptick and a rhythm and a soul. And they didn't have to speak. They just needed the music to basically speak for themselves. Because the depth and the lyrics themselves in the movie, the music was also a character in all of these movies. Life lessons learned, again, it's all about communication. All very Hollywood. The hook was the Sanaa Lathan character, how her and Taye Diggs became friends over the birth of hip hop. And they wasted most of their 20s as they were going to get their careers. And as hip hop matured and they matured, they almost missed the opportunity for having a long lasting relationship beyond friendship. They finally get it together, of course, at the end. And he divorces his cheating wife. And he finally goes with the woman that has always loved them since they first married, and that can understand what they were trying to do. Again, creative. She's a music editor. He worked initially for Whacked Millennium Records, that with the Ren and Tin characters, which I thought was hysterical. But they also But they, then they also, she helps him start his own label, sign the Cabbie character, and then go on, and Queen Latifah was in this too, and then go on again after some goofy and some hiccups and some Hollywood twists and turns. They would again go on to have a great, so-called great life. And I also noticed, this was actually released in 2002, a year after, 9/11. It would take them about a decade and a half to finally get it together. It ran for 16 weeks, and it was rare, kind of received, actually. And I'm wondering, let's see, was it critically received? Because it received a whole bunch of NAACP Image Awards. It was okay, but it was also, could it have been, I think the music, the album did better than the actual financial, I don't think it was considered a financial success, but what it did for the Black community is, again, has an exceptional cult following. And I was listening to a podcast earlier, like yesterday, and how if you say like this is one of the three Black movies that you can't say that you don't like or that wasn't good. I don't think, again, as a screenplay, I don't think that is what drew me to the movie, because I think the plot line is stupid or sappy. But again, the focus on is the music itself. The music is another and a formidable character in the movie. And they treated it well, and it treated itself well, because again, this is another soundtrack that's just chock full of some of the greatest artists. And they mention a lot of these cats, in the movie itself. And I don't remember when this was actually released. This is Brown Sugar, by, D'Angelo. This was actually released 5 to 7 years before Brown Sugar the movie actually dropped. And whatever you can say about him, let me tell you about this girl, baby, I should. I met her in Philly, and her name was Brown Sugar. See, we've been making love constantly, that's why my eyes are a shade. Blood burgundy. They mention, and I think the Taye Diggs character basically defines what Brown Sugar was. But again, it was the evolution of hip hop and the relationship between those the two main characters. That was what the movie was about. And I don't, like someone, a critic basically said, it could have been called Love of Hip Hop or something along that moniker instead of Brown Sugar. So, again, Black classic, great music, and not a bad way to spend in celebration of Black love, or just if you got to spend your time inside, either get these soundtracks and just listen to the music and really figure out where in the in these movies that the music is actually can be played. And FYI, all of these songs can actually be found on the blogs or the podcast playlist on iTunes. Just navigate to the blog notes and click on the collage of the album covers, and it'll take you right to the playlist on iTunes. Oh, is the late, great Sam Cooke, Cupid. And why not start this next segment in the podcast? Because this is one of my great loves and why I started this podcast. I keep going back to the fact where I was in my life back in 2019 when I first started or I conceptualized about the podcast, because I started it at a time when I was working in a state that I absolutely, at a job or in a place I despised. Don't get me wrong, I'm still doing being a physician advisor and as a medical director and my role as a medical director. I still review charts and make recommendations about should the insurer pay for certain types of requested care. I love doing that. I just didn't love where I was doing it and who I was doing it with. I have a lot of autonomy and I get paid very well to do what I do. But I started this podcast as a means of entertainment because at the time, my own personal entertainment, at the time I was in a place where I didn't like watching TV. Chump was still in office and I was in the armpit, I call, of the Appalachian Mountains. And with little more than a concept, I started reading books and just making comments on the books back in, February, March-ish of 2019. And when I first hit 100 downloads, I was ecstatic. So now, a little over 2 short years later, I am well over 3,000 downloads and people are listening to my podcast consistently from all over the world. And as kind of a information nerd, with Podbeam, you actually have the ability to find out from where, who actually is downloading and listening to you, how many listeners that you are retaining. I've had an uptick on listeners from Germany in this past week. Big ups to y'all, Great Britain. What helps is if you do proper hashtags, you can actually, it somehow attracts the attention of the search engines. And in itself, it doesn't seem like a whole bunch, but, and if you use the proper hashtag, like I used the Cousin Duchess Megan hashtag when she spilled the tea about her time after being married to the royal family, a blog post when I included my conversation with my friend Yvonne, or the Widow Vaughn, that kind of... Those types of things are actually how you can get more and more reviews, and you start attracting attention of advertisers. I don't have any advertisers or sponsors at this point, so I'm actually pretty free in what I am allowed to basically do. I don't have too many restrictions. I can post when I actually have the time, and having a leisurely means to come up with and how I want to structure what I want to say actually only gives the show more credibility and gives it a little bit more cohesion. And now that I've actually trying to do multimedia kind of, because I don't know if people want to just listen to me talk about random books. I thank you for looking and listening to it, but it would be great if, you know, I could have a sponsor and have somebody else to be the sound person, or being able to hire somebody to be able to do that, because that's my next biggest stage. I would love to have, I have a amateur understanding of a lot of the technology that it takes to actually do a podcast. And if I want to do truly a well thought out and well produced podcast, I'm going to need a producer and somebody in sound to be able to do and mix it up on the back end and make sure it makes sense. And with that said, technology is a great thing when you can actually figure it out. And since this is passion project, I have a lot of ways and a lot of means that I can actually do what I love to do. And I hope it is reflective in what I've actually, when I do these productions and when I actually do the post. So, and thanks again for all the listeners in Great Britain and in Germany that is making this show a success. Thank you for the downloads. But now I'm going to just call your attention to the books. One of the good things, even though today I did not receive my paper because we had inclement weather here. I don't know if it was blown away or if somebody just jacked my New York Times. But one of the great things about Sundays is not only listening to great music, but also reading the paper, in particular, the Times Book Review. And this week was a wealth of book awesomeness was included in this week's New York Book Review. Even though I didn't get the paper today because, as I said, I think somebody jacked it, the book review actually drops on Saturdays, and it goes out to people like me in different cities. The hard copy is, of course, is printed and made available to everybody else that has a subscription, also of the hard copy print on Sunday. But this is You Don't Know What Love Is by the Miles Davis Quintet, late great Miles Davis. And I believe I have added almost 10 or 11 different books to this week's my Chatterbooks online bookstore. You can navigate to bookshop.org/shop/Chatterbooks to find all of these books for pre-order, because a lot of these books are not going to be released until after April 1st. But I added, I didn't know this was published, and it will be for pre-order, and it ships on April 20th. The great author of Native Son, Mr. Richard Wright, the man who loved underground. This is crazy with all the gun violence that we have gone on now, but he writes about Fred Daniels, a black man, is picked up by the police after a brutal double murder and tortured until he confesses to a crime he did not commit. After signing a confession, he escapes from custody and flees into the city sewer system. And that's where he actually hides out, living on the down underground because they forced him to do something. And the injustice of it all is not lost on me. In the face of all of the mass murders that are going on, I've also added to my For Us By Us section pieces by Helen Oyemi. This is when Otto and Xavier Shin declare their love, and Aunt gives them a trip on a sleeper train to mark their new commitment and to get them out of her house. They set off with their pet mongoose, and Otto and Xavier arrive at their sleepy local train station, but are quickly deduced that the Lucky Day is no ordinary locomotive. And on they go to have just been on the train itself and who they meet on the train, even though it seems that they're on this train by themselves, hints to the craziness that's about to abound with their trip. And that is by Helen Oyemi. And I also have added Caitlin Greenidge's Liberty. This is was named one of the most anticipated books of 2021, of course, by Oprah. They say it's pure brilliance, and it's so much will be written about it. This is about a coming of age freeborn girl, black girl in Reconstruction era Brooklyn. Liberty Sampson is all too aware that her purposeful mother, who is a physician, has a vision for their future together. Liberty is to go to medical school and then to continue to practice alongside her. But of course, the rebel and the free thinker of her ain't trying to hear all of that.
Give me some of that no limit shit. Yeah.
That is
got my nigga Fiend in the house.
Ghetto. Symphony by Snoop Dogg, C Murder, and Fiend. And no, we will not be listening to that. I think I'm going to have to change this up to this. More Sam Cooke. This is Cupid. Oh, excuse me. I Love You for Sentimental Reasons. And away we go. I also added more historical romance, Good Company. Again, much anticipated author or book of the year by Oprah Magazine, Cynthia Dupree Sweeney. This is about Flora Mancini has been married for 20 years, but everything she thought and knew about herself, her marriage, her relationship with her best friend Margaret is upended when she stumbles upon an envelope containing her husband's wedding ring and one that he had claimed that he had lost one summer. They are trying to raise their daughter in, of course, Manhattan, and to keep Julian's small theater company, Good Company, afloat. But there's so much turmoil as life unfolds, as they cross divergent paths. And their paths, I should say, diverge. And then something happens to bring them all together. Tragedy has the makings of a possible Lifetime special, I'm just saying. I also added several books that I would like you guys to check out. From the children's book section, Sunday Rain, which is apropos for this rainy Sunday day. Toasty is a slice of toast that wants to become a dog, that aspires to become a dog. And Milo, the vision, of a little black kid reimagining the world, through his eyes. There is, a bunch of the Sado series. It's Sado the Rabbit, The Sea of Tea. That actually doesn't come out until 2022. But Sado the Rabbit by Yuku Anoya, again, another beautiful picture book translated into English, is about someone, like a kid or someone, imagine themselves being an animal and then becoming that animal and how magical their world is. Very fantasy driven, and it's a great a whimsical tale that is entertaining and positive for the reader that lives, the young reader that lives in your house. I also added Amy Klobuchar's Antitrust, taking on monopoly power in her role on that committee. Whereabouts by Jhumpa Lahiri. It's this book I'm finding interesting. I may actually have to add this to my own personal book collection. It is about someone that basically picks up and moves to Italy and becomes immersed in the Italian life. And this is this experience, kind of like a eat, pray, love, another eat, pray, love, all in Italy. Translated, written in Italian and translated in English. So I think it's this Asian American, Asians, experience as an Asian in Italy, being immersed in that particular culture, doing what she loves, just like I'm doing what I love. How crazy is that, you know? Don't stop to the beach, y'all. If you don't stop, a freak, freak. And that is Love of My Life, an ode to hip hop that I played at the top of the podcast. And I hope you enjoy the last few notes of it before I move on.
We couldn't rush, but whenever I got lonely or needed some advice, he gave me his shoulder. His words were very nice, but that is all behind me, 'cause now there is no other.
That is Destiny's Child, Survivor. And I couldn't think of any other song to start out this part of the segment more than this, because and this is going to be the last draw, my last thoughts on how Dutch's cousin Megan spilled the tea on the Oprah show, during Oprah's interview. And this is a story of the survival of a young couple in the onslaught of the tabloids in Great Britain. And that's where I'm going to just leave it right there. I don't know these people. I have a fascination, probably no more than any other nerdy person that is a royal watcher. But I've watched that interview now twice, and I agree with one of the royal commentators who basically, it was like her words were like a grenade was set off in this family. And this is not like their family, the royal family is not like any other run-of-the-mill family. I basically wrote all of this out in a blog post in under my nerdy stuff curated by Tenfro that you can read if you become a subscriber. But I'm going to try to stick to it because I basically scripted it to basically read during the podcast. But if you navigate to my delsangelsinc.blog page and then click on nerdy stuff curated by hashtag Tenfro, you'll be able to read this in its entirety and make comments on it if you like. It's titled Final Thoughts, The Naivete of Dutch's Cousin Megan, When Your Family is a Firm and the Firm is the Family, and Other Missed Opportunities. And other nerdy commoner royal watchers, just like myself, I should say, are dismayed how poorly treated she was in the tabloids and how she survived it all. And if you believe what her words she said, which I do, she only survived it by the skin of her teeth. We all held out hope that she and Kate would become allies, because I remember when I visited London after William and Kate were married, I visited the freaking dress as well as Diana's dress. And I thought I was going to have the opportunity to also have a visitation like that with Meghan's dress. But I don't know if that much is given to the second to inherit. If she would even be given that opportunity. And I'm looking at this picture of these two couples in happier times. I think this was a picture from 2018, how they were on their way or coming from somewhere, and how they just looked happy and they looked so pretty. both how Kate and Megan are both, they're the same age. I think Megan may be a year older than she is. But how beautiful, and they are the, they have the shapes that are desired by most designers would just die for. And how they were so beautiful. There's so many people that could admire them, that there was room at the top for both of these couples to be traded positively. And they could have used Dutch and Cousin Megan star power to basically put them all, the glow up of them all. And they couldn't even leave her alone. They couldn't even let them do that and do it in a positive way, because I guess that's not, that doesn't make people click. So they basically spun up the attacks, like she had to bite Kate style when she herself was already, when Meghan Markle was already a star prior to this, and she did not need the tabloids to make her a star. She was already a star. She already had designers woofing after her. So why couldn't they just have given her, the girl, her props? She didn't need to bite on anyone. She was already stylish within her own right. So they basically still added, still it's tone deaf, it's all get out. The basically the thing that she was basically talking about was the, when they just got it wrong. You can talk about avocados and the way she cradled her baby bump, but when you don't correct them, and that's what she wanted to do, just tell the truth. It doesn't have to be all sugar plums and fairies, but just tell the truth. And they're still not telling the truth, because this is a quote that's in OK that came out a couple of days ago. An insider exclusively told the Royal Observer that Meghan and Kate Middleton have had zero contact since the shocking CBS tell-all on Sunday, March 7th, during which Meghan discussed a previous incident between the duchesses that resulted in tears. Kate's biggest fear is Meghan will reveal contents of anything she says. There's no trust after what Meghan did. The Royal Observer source said it is clear that Meghan shares private conversations with reporters and TV personalities, which makes it very hard to move forward. What does that mean exactly? She didn't, because Oprah scooped y'all and got the story that I know y'all wanted. And she basically told her that you're the person that you wanted to make a star was acting like a rude bitch. And made her cry. She just corrected. She just told the truth, because she knew y'all never would. Sorry. They're still so tone deaf not to realize that she revealed the truth of the tabloid shade. And that's why they're still so ticked. She basically revealed that the refined, the portrayed, refined Kate Middleton can be a shrill, tactless Karen, and they're still mad that she would dare to break that image that they so carefully portrayed. I thought Meghan's handling of the incident was setting the record straight, that Kate owned up to it, apologized, and moved on. It was they, the tabloids, that ran with that false narrative to bolster the positive image of one at the detriment of the other. They are also salty that she sat down with Oprah instead of them, and she is controlling her own narrative truthfully. That is all she wants known is the truth, and it's obvious that they are not, because that doesn't sell papers or get clicks. You can still stand for the king, the queen, Prince William, and even their fop of a father, Charles, and still respect Prince Harry and the Duchess, Cousin Meghan. It just seems as if the tabloids still want to slur this young woman because she's not royal, she's not first in line to inherit, and she's an American. Because towing this line will be a because they don't seem to understand, they continue to tow this line is detrimental to their existence, but also to the relevancy of the monarchy. I think the cries to end the monarchy are going to become even louder. Sorry, y'all. But was Meghan just naive? If the Duchess had prepared for her life with Prince Harry like she prepared for a TV series or a film, of which she has had many, she has like over 31 credits. I had no idea. But more so if she had just sat in a Western civilization class, she would have at least learned the sheer power of the monarchy and the influence in government and culture of Western civilization is beyond this family being anything outside of being so far beyond, I should say, Hollywood fame. This is like the Jacksons, the Osmonds, even the DuPonts on crack, because their family and the monarchy is what is Western civilization. Nobody has that kind of, you know, cred, you know what I mean? I think she was trying to not to have her impressions colored by social media, but I think she really needed a true Western civilization historical meaning, and when your family actually establishes Western civilization, that is big. Harry is to the manner born, and I think, and he also admitted he was completely unaware of his own captivity, and he could not verbalize something that is literally ingrained in your DNA. And when your existence is all about appearance and has nothing to do with substance, how can you balance that? And how can you teach somebody that? They seemed like they were both naive, that he would basically give school her as they stumbled along, and then she would be protected. But that there was no protection because there was no precedence for it, and nobody was being forced to create the precedence. It would be so simple to think that you would be able to exist when you have no real role outside of a wife and cutting a few ribbons. And as a commoner and married to the second in line, beyond chilling with your grandmother at a few garden parties and showing up a royal ascot, that's probably it for you. And you keep a low profile. But it's a restrictive life, so outside of what I'm sure both were used to when they were just dating, or her life in Hollywood. She really would have been great at charitable work and representing the family in a positive way if the tabloids had just let her do what she does best and learn to work with her. But no, that was not the narrative that they wanted to spin, because they wanted to continue with the tried and true and let the first in line and blah, 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 blah. Let's continue to spin and double down on that narrative. And we got to get rid of this girl. There was no playbook, obviously. And they were not used to people fighting back in such a verbal way. A lot of these things maybe were done in private before, but she's from America and she ain't fitting to do any of that. If you're going to try to run it like a corporation and have an HR department, and then HR has no willingness to, or ability to protect you, then it just was just so all so disconcerting. And the microaggressions and her experience as a true being, as an outsider. Then you tell me that we are the firm, and we're going to run it like a business, but then you don't give your HR department any teeth or to protect you or to get you the help that you need. You can't have it both ways. You're going to have to set the precedent, period, to be able to survive in a new millennium. Most companies know that if they cannot pivot, they won't survive. And this is the issue with the royal family. And then they seem to all be up in huff and tough because they've been accused of racism. You're not only racist, you are the racist. And you're the supreme racist. I mean, at the height of the British Empire, everything the sunlight hit was part of the empire. You made it your purpose to conquer and to subjugate. That because they did not look like you. They didn't speak the King's English, and they were not you. And even the 53 countries that are still part of the Commonwealth, 70% of those people are brown. 70%. And with the exception of Queen Charlotte of Mecklenburg, there were no legitimate and recognized working royals of color, although people of color represent the majority of the Commonwealth, as I just said. The reason why you successfully conquered and colonized and annihilated entire populations was because of the British superiority, the lily white British superiority. And it's ingrained and was seen as your God-given right. It is the basis of the racism that still plagues my society, as well as the basis for the even treacherous apartheid system that almost destroyed South Africa. Any sensitivity training is going to have to be factual and not whitewashing the truth and the brutality and the negativity of British imperialism. Because once you accept it and make every effort to improve and move forward in a positive manner, it would go far in healing the relationship between the royal brothers. I don't know how much is going to be able to be healed between Meghan and Kate, or if there isn't even a rift, because we don't know, because we can't trust the tabloids. Unless she says it herself and makes protocol and speaks out for herself, I'm not sure if there is anything to fix, because we don't really know the truth. However, Archwell, discover who you are outside of this institution that's like a family on crack with unwritten rules and protocols, invisible agendas enforced by microaggressions, and being allowed to learn and have some insight into the subtlety that is this family's existence by the family members is going to be key in reestablishing relationships. Also, this is a case study to support doing the psychiatric work necessary to heal from all of the dysfunction. They have to do the work to exist into the next millennia. They have to find a way to live outside the royal bubble. I think this is going to be different than what's his name? King Edward, the one that abdicated for that other American divorcee. Because he has his mother's inheritance. She was a star. They still have the star power to do the charitable work and the work to heal the world that they probably would not have been allowed to do if they had still been in a royal bubble. And if they are, in order for them to be successful, they're going to have to be super successful, because they are going to again prove that they didn't need the tabloids and that restrictive institution to be the success in their minds and the world minds. And again, it's going to come back to, so why do we need royalty in these titles and do all of this support and patronages? What is the point? Well, that's going to be the point, because I think they are truly going to be successful. And to do the same work and don't need the royal patronage to do it. That is going to be another slap in the face. But it's also going to be a testament to what does it mean for success and what does it mean to be able to work together. And again, the whole, how all of this kind of played out, you know, when they tried to step down and it had been in the works for 18 months, and then they spun that narrative that they got kicked out of the royal family. But what I don't think they anticipated is being rescued again by another American. Tyler Perry flew them from Canada and then gave them his house and provided security until they could stand up their own jank. And then they create Archwell with no restrictions from the firm, because I'm sure they would not have been able to stand up that type of production company without being hounded by the firm. But since y'all cut off all support, all bets are off. They don't have to follow you. You don't have to do what you say. and stop it when they said, even from their designs, either they nitpicked it apart, like they stole that from some type of property manager down in Australia. And why didn't she use her cipher? Because she is not a senior working member of royalty. She can't use those ciphers without the, because she ain't working for them anymore. It's like copyright infringement. She ain't in the company. She can't use the firm, the company's shit. Sorry. I think just because of her, I think it's also going to be successful because she wants it to be a success for something to leave to her children. And she has that American screw you, I will succeed stubbornness that I'm sure is deeply ingrained into her diminutive bones. That allowed her to be so successful in Hollywood. But they're going to have to figure this out. How are they going to need to reestablish or, the real bond with the family and then the firm? And this new kid that's getting ready to drop literally this summer. And they're going to have to do it. I mean, instead of saying it's not done that way or it's never been done, how about how can we fix it to protect us and bless us so we all can grow stronger? There's enough room at the top and enough people in the world to admire all of you separately. And you don't have to destroy the one in order to have the popularity of them all. It's not, it is just that clear and just that simple. And they're going to need to figure this out to secure not only the relevance and the need for the tabloids, because do we need, in a civilized society, do we need that, still need that type of trash to be in existence? And because if you don't have the tabloids, then who's going to speak for the monarchy and prove the monarchy, the success of the monarchy? Who is going to be able to do that and to do that transparently and with truth? Because the relationships and what y'all are doing now is not working, and you're not going to survive into the next millennia if you don't figure this crap out. And that's how I'm going to end. This episode of Tenfro is Reading. That is I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. And that is a great way to bookend the previous section of the premium content, my thoughts on the tea from the monarchy. Because the royal family is going to need to extricate itself from its incestuous relationship with the tabloids. They're going to need to heal themselves from within and to be able to become relevant and to be a true positive example of family and resiliency for the world. All of the music that I actually showcased on this week's episode can be found in the One Podcast playlist that's available for you to listen to on iTunes right now. The books that I spoke of are available for pre-order and for purchase on Chatterbooks. Also, the link is available in the full podcast notes. And also, you can purchase other books as well as swag for Star Wars and Star Trek also at the website. And all of the movies I actually own, but I watched on Amazon, the streaming service, but I'm sure you can see the movies that I spoke about. Boomerang, Eddie Murphy's great movie, as well as Love Jones and Brown Sugar are all available for rental and for purchase and streaming on Amazon and other providers. This episode was a great break from a dreary Sunday, filled with music that I hope will get you dancing and in your seats and maybe dancing with your partner. And again, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed creating this piece, and have a great Sunday.